September 11, 2021, it's the Watt for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watford Pedro Show. Happy Saturday. Well, trippy Saturday, right? 20 years later. Started off with Beshmer Swing. Come on, pronounce it right. What? John Coltrane with Don Cherry. Trippy meeting of minds there. And then Colin John, Electric Lotus. Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy. And because of those Skype engineers from Estonia, I got Mr. Colin John with me from Columbus, Ohio. How you doing, Colin?
I'm great, Mike. Thanks for having me on your
Absolutely.
Show.
Absolutely. And we got to give big, big thank yous to Chris Butler for making the connect.
Yeah, big time. Chris is great. And he was one of the reasons this album came together. I can tell you about that later as
okay.
needed.
Can we go back before, like, as early as you can go? Can you bring me your earliest musical recollection, please?
Well, like a lot of American kids, you know, my parents listened to a lot of music, a lot of big band, a lot of pop, soul music. I remember when I was a kid, I was a trumpet player as well in grade school. You know, in fifth grade through 11th, I played the trumpet and the cornet and the baritone horn.
Whoa.
And
what you're telling me is your earliest memory is hearing your folks play their big band records?
Pretty much,
okay.
Yeah.
And now this pad that you grew up at, where was it? Ohio?
That was in Akron, Ohio.
Okay, Akron.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. There's the Chris Butler connect, man. But we're going way back. Was there instruments in that pad, Colin?
You know, neither of my parents played, but I have two sisters, and they did. You know, they played clarinet, but I had a cousin who had given me a Stella guitar, you know, the proverbial one with the strings, you know, half inch off the neck. And I fooled around with that a little bit. But it was mostly, you know, listening to pop and rock and blues when I was growing up.
Okay. And then you were mentioning you got involved with the music program at school and you got on the horns and you were in the marching band, I guess, right?
No, not the marching band, but in the concert band. Then what happened when I was in eighth grade, I punctured my eardrum in a neighborhood football game, and I couldn't blow on the horn, but the band director knew I was a serious musician, as serious you can be when you're, what, 12 years old? And and so we did not have a contrabass in the orchestra in eighth grade, so he put me on the double bass.
Wow, the stand-up.
And so I started.
The doghouse.
Yeah, so I start. The doghouse. So I started bowing that in the concert band and then plucking it in the what they call the stage band.
Okay, so
and from there I
evolved. And some pizzicato.
Yeah.
Did you learn how to read?
Yeah. I did.
Okay, that.
Yeah,
that's
so,
bitching. Can you tell me the first record you bought with your own money?
It was a 45 of Elvis Presley, Hound Dog.
Good song.
When I was
Carl Perkins. Well, not the writer, but Big Mama Thornton had a hit with that, right?
That was her song, yeah. But, I mean, I just loved that sound. You know,
sure,
we had that Sun's Echo and Scotty Moore's guitar and DJ
Scotty
Fontana.
Moore.
I just,
Scotty Moore.
To me, that was more exciting than the dude singing it, you know?
Bill Black on the bass, stand up. I know there was a period where they didn't carry a drummer, and that's where, you know, them rockabilly guys would slap the string against the neck, kind of fill in for a drummer.
Oh, is that where that came?
Yeah.
Is that where that came from?
Before
that's
Larry Graham and funk. You know, I know it's tied to kind of funk in a way, but, you know, music's related, just like rapping with, what do you call that, square dancing and auctioneer call. Everything's related in a trippy way.
Go
ahead.
Call and response, huh?
Absolute. Absolute. And, you know, humans are interested in what the other human is doing. And so wants to be totally original, but borrows like a motherfucker. Anyway.
Right.
what was the first gig you went and saw, Colin?
I believe it was Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass, courtesy of my mother. She was real. Remember that gold album on A&M?
Absolutely.
And the whipped cream.
I also remember I remember looking at the spelling of the word, and I don't see any fucking A there. It's no Aunt Josephine. It's Tijuana.
Right.
But that was close to the word
Tijuana.
Marijuana, which was mota, right? Which I was way into as a kid.
Right.
And of course, that album cover, man, it's singular. It's fucking epic.
And, you know, I just saw a thing. I think it was on Instagram. She just turned, like, 80.
Okay.
The model on the cover of the Taste of Honey record, right? And so she's holding the album up. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Absolute. You know, life's a journey.
She's iconic. And no, she'd walk down the street and no one would know who
right,
she is.
Right, right, right.
You know, so.
But she's on one of the most famous album covers ever. Yeah, it's a moment in time, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes when we do artistic expression, it's kind of like a diary entry.
It is, isn't it? But, you know, I always love those melodies, you know, from
Absolutely.
The horns. And, you know, not just like Herb Albert, but jazz stuff, too.
But,
you know?
There's a tricky story about that recording on the rhythm section. The drummer man's Mr. Hal Blaine. And they didn't know how to fucking come in back. So he said, shit, I'll just give you the fucking kick drum. So he was one of the contributors to the conference. Yeah, that boop, 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 ba da da. That was totally improvised in the moment at the studio. I read about that shit. You know, he's on, like, what, 50,000 records? Him and Earl Palmer, Jesus.
Yeah, hell, Blaine is, like, the most recorded drummer ever.
Right.
Was Carol Kay playing bass?
Maybe on that tune? Maybe. They ended up kind of enemies. That was very sad. Very sad. She said they never called it the record crew. Also, she claimed she played some James Jammer, but she's a hell of a bassist, man. I have learned so much from her. Incredible bassist. But just the idea of them letting the drummer help with the composition, I think that's beautiful. No, you know,
the
stereotype, Colin, right? They're always making drummers and bass players, too, be like fucking Neanderthal, knuckle draggers and shit.
Sure thing, Watt, but keep in mind, when the Stones, when Bill Wyman left, the only decision they left it up to Dear Charlie was to pick the bass player. And he was like, thanks a fucking lot all these years, right? And he chose Daryl Jones because Daryl had played with Miles strictly from that. But he thought, and, you know, Charlie Watts is my favorite rock and roll drummer.
Yeah.
And he's not really a rock and roll drummer. He was a jazz drummer, kind of, you know?
Well, blues for sure, too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Bill Wyman, great bass, blues bass man.
Absolutely. There's an album with Junior Wells and Buddy Guy with Charlie and Bill as the rhythm section.
That's
right. Recorded in Montreux. And that, you know, those guys, they knew their shit, you know?
Right. And in fact, Bill's a little bit older than Charlie was.
Yeah.
But anyway, a lot of times Keith didn't let Bill on the albums.
Correct.
Yeah. And even fucking Charlie, he ain't on Sympathy for the Devil. I think Jimmy, the producer man. Anyway, back to your story.
Jimmy
Colin.
Miller, yeah.
Yeah. You fucking do it. You know, something like that. The Liquid Studio, I was. Beggar Banquet, Let It Bleed sessions, really interesting. Ry Cooder, right? Anyway,
yeah,
Stones,
correct.
We could get into that forever, but I want to get into fucking Brother Colin's story. So, you know the thing after school? Not graduating, but in the afternoon, the garage band, the basement band, the bedroom band. Did you do something like that with that Stella?
Man, I totally did. When I was in high school, I went to a Jesuit high school in Akron called Walsh, and it was just fellas. Nice. So I didn't have the distraction of girls. So my friend Joe Foley, and he played drums, and I remember I had this ratty little Supro amplifier. But it was cool. It was given to me by a family friend.
The first two Led Zeppelin albums are done on a Supro.
Right. And I think it was because it was small. Like it had a 10-inch speaker. And I had a Gibson. It was a Les Paul SG, 1961.
Oh, so you graduated
up
from the Stella.
That I bought in one of the local, what they had a paper called the Trade-In Times. And it was a guy. And I remember it was $250, right? And so I saved up my money, and my dad pitched in $50, and I got this guitar, And then a family friend gave the little Supro amp, and my friend Joe Foley and I would jam, like, all the time. In the basement.
Yeah.
And just making ruckus, you know. I mean, we were playing blues, we were playing rock. So that was in, like, 1981. And
your buddy here, he's a drummer man?
Well, now I think he works for the Mercantile.
No, back in those
Chicago.
Days, it was just guitar. Guitar and drums. You had no bass.
Yeah, we were kind of like that band now, GA20. You know.
Okay. Well, I was wondering why you left the stand up because you got the Stella, and then you went on.
Well,
to
here's
the...
here's what happened with that, Mike.
Yeah.
So I wanted to play blues. You know, I had seen Sun Seals and Buddy Guy, and in Cleveland there was a legend, Robert Jr. Lockwood.
Sure.
And I really liked that. At that time, I'm listening to the Stones and the Jimi Hendrix Experience and the Jeff Beck Group.
Yeah.
And Cream, Wheels of Fire.
Yeah.
And I was
I
like that. So, you know, like a lot of white kids, then you dig deeper when you're into it. And I really liked that. It was just like the pure rawness, like Hound Dog Taylor.
Yeah.
You know, and I love that. And so none of my peers were playing that kind of guitar. They were all into Rush and Led Zeppelin, and which is cool, but...
Yeah, because Led Zeppelin, Jimmy played with Jeff Beck.
Right.
Jimmy Page.
And then, so I just said, well, I'll just play guitar myself. So that was a good thing. Other than that Stella, that was my first good guitar.
Okay.
I don't have it because I loaned it to a classmate. He dropped it, broke the headstock off, had it repaired, and it was
horror.
Never the same.
The horror. Look, you gave me this a version of Folsom Prison Blues I want to play.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you. sure my dog can sing. Oh, oh, oh. I cannot hear my dog singing, but I'm sure my dog can sing.
That chunk of music start off, Colin John Electric Lotus, Folsom Prison Blues. Brand new from P. Kane, Pat Kane, new solo album, Half a Model Home with O. Beautiful album. Headboggle, brand new album from him, of the Coast, East Bay. Skit Pop is the tune. Bill Nace with Part 3 of 8, a piece called Both. Sam Locke Ward featuring Chris Ford. I Have Gazed Into Everything. Bob Buckle Jr. from nearby Dubuque, because Sam Locke Ward's Iowa City. I'm Sure My Dog Can Sing. From Hokkaido, the big North Island, Japan, Car Thief School. Baramos. And then Eviction, Virginia Shin, with a piece for Gerp Fast Records Home Session Program Number 1, 2021. And finally, Colin John Electric Lotus, Rolling Stone, Paint It Black. That sitar sound. You have some fun with that. I noticed a lot of the music you gave me, Colin. It's got the trippy kind of, I don't know. It's a guitar, right? Is it a choral?
What it is, it's actually made by Jerry Jones. He was a guitar builder in Nashville.
Right, and he was making the Dan Electros.
Yeah, so I can tell you how this all came about, how I started using that thing.
Go ahead.
So in 2013, my partner, Long Tall Deb, who's a great soul blues singer from Texas, she and I did a tour in India and Nepal called the High on the Blues Tour. So we went to about six cities in India and Kathmandu in Nepal. Well, you know, sometimes you gather inspiration from your travels, and we did from that. It was mind-blowing, life-changing experience. So we came back. Deb had these lyrics and a title called Streets of Mumbai. And the song, I came up with the riff pretty quickly, and then we decided that really needs that subcontinental sound. And I had not played one before, but I was familiar with them from, you know, a lot of the pop songs in the 60s and 70s had it on there. Right. You know, Stevie Wonder, Signed, Sealed, Delivered. And, you know, so that sound was there. So I found one on a Craigslist search in Dallas, and I emailed the guy, and he mailed it to me. I bought it, used it on the track, and then I thought, okay, what are we going to do now? You know, I've got this cool instrument. I'm not just going to play it every once in a while when we play Streets of Mumbai. So I started playing it on my solo gigs. And what I do on my solo gigs, I play a lot of instrumental music, kind of like what you're hearing on the Electric Lotus album. And I noticed when I started playing it, it really grabbed people's attention. So a little light went off in my head. And then people kept bugging me, you should make an album featuring that. And I thought, you know, there's going to be seven people who listen to this record. And then a couple years went by. And I'm not concerned with that. You know, I like to make music for music's sake, and everything else is a bonus. So people kept asking me, are you going to make that baby sitar record? And I thought, okay. And then I told Chris about it, Chris Butler, and he was like, yeah, you should definitely do that. And he goes, I'll help you hook up the studio. And we have a mutual friend named Jeff Koval in Akron who's got a really nice studio in his home. And so we went there, and I told Chris, well, you've got to be part of it. So Chris played bass and percussion, and he was there for amoral support and whatnot. And, you know, Chris has got big ears, and so he helps me not second-guess myself. So he was like an unofficial producer, as was Jeffrey on the record, and my partner, Long Tall Deb. So that's how it came about. And so I recorded it in 2 days, with nominal overdubs. Chris did the percussion and bass on, about 3/4 of the tracks, and the rest there is no bass. And, I thought, okay, let's see what happens. And it got kind of a nice reception, bigger than I had expected, because the reason I chose mostly familiar songs, I thought, well, I'm going to introduce this or reintroduce because Vinnie Bell, who invented the choral sitar, right, had made a record called Pop Goes the Baby Sitar. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to and as far as I know, no one had really done that since then, other than, you know, you hear it occasionally used in a song for texture. And I thought, no, I'm going to do this. So I chose songs that I know people will know the melodies. You know, that's why there's Johnny Cash and Beatles and, you know, but then there's Tchaikovsky and, you know, well,
music is music, and I thought, you prove that. And you reinterpret and using this baby sitar or this choral sitar, it just makes it more personal. But then it shows you the common ground that we all share and why we're receptive.
Well, it does.
Yeah.
But it made me laugh. One of my friends from Texas, when he heard it, you know, Deb and Chris and I, we did a concert. We previewed the album live. And people really got a kick out of it. So there were a friend of mine from Texas that said, man, that's how this reminds me of grits with curry sauce.
Yeah.
So,
you know that Johnny Cash song, One Piece at a Time? I don't know if he wrote it.
Yeah.
It's about you making a car out of all these different, well, like he works at the auto factory, right? He's using all these different parts that he's taking home to build his fucking car. But, man,
that's awesome.
I think a lot of human expression can be that way, and why not? Like, for example, I can write a novel and not invent one word, and it still can be original.
Well, yeah, you know, like, I've got your book, Mike Watt, On and Off Base, you know? And,
well, I didn't mean to, like, mention that, but...
No, I know, but there's some really great here. I'll just open it up randomly. It's sitting here on the coffee table. The blood rushing through my head is like a river carrying my open eyes over a waterfall where only mist and spray show maybe where it all ends up. And there you go. That's open and random. That's just what the fuck you were talking about.
Well, that's a tour diary, you know. You know when you're on tour, it's a trip. You know about that. You know, we kind of jumped ahead. We got all the way to the record without... what you did from high school to that point. So when we come back for the second hour, because we're out of time now, September 11, 2021, edition of Wapito Show, special guest, Colin John. Hold tight for hour two. September 11, 2021, it's the second hour of the Wapito Show.
Thank you.
Show start off the second hour, calling John Electric Lotus, jockey full of bourbon. Then Mike Cooper and Elliot Sharp with Coupling Resonators, Lucas Sabella, Sydney, Australia, Goody, Carl 2000, Cliff on the Volga, Pet Bottom Ninjin with Colta, and finally Twin Pete, calling John Electric Lotus. So what did you do out after school? Did you pursue music in higher education?
I did. So I went to Ohio University.
Ohio State? Buckeye?
No, Ohio University. Bobcats.
Oh, yeah, different. Big difference.
Yeah, different. That's Southeast Ohio, absolutely. Appalachia, right across the river from West Virginia and not far from Kentucky.
Right,
anyway,
right,
so there
right.
I was in there.
There's a
there
town,
I was in
is
art
it,
school
town
and
Athens?
Kind of.
Colin, is the town Athens?
It certainly is.
I played there. Man, it's my memory.
I know you did.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, go on. I'm sorry.
No, it's great. So I was taking art classes and history and literature and whatnot, but I knew I was going to be a musician, but I really loved it there. So at the time, I had a couple bands. I was also getting in to the kind of stuff that you played, right? So I was like into the Minutemen and Gang of Four and Black Flag. But I was also into blues. So yeah. we had this one band called the Seeing Eye Dogs, and we played sort of punky blues. Because, you know, when you're in college and you're surrounded by artistic people,
yeah.
You can do that. It's a lot of fun.
Sure.
Then I joined a band that a friend of mine put together called Bluesimus Maximus. And it was kind of a Chicago-style band. But yeah. Everyone had eclectic taste.
Sure.
So I did that. And, you know, and then when I graduated, I thought, well, this is what I want to do. So I answered an ad in the Village Voice for a blues band, for a touring blues band. And so I drove to Manhattan.
Wow. You're talking about Athens, Ohio. You're reading the Village Voice. And you answer an ad and drive all the way to Manhattan.
Yeah, so I called the guy, and he was funny. His name was Mike Markovitz, Little Mike and the Tornadoes. And they were a touring band that backed a lot of blues legends, from Pinetop Perkins, who was Muddy Waters' piano player.
No, I saw him with Marcia Ball.
Hubert Sumlin from The Wolf.
I saw him open up for Marcia Ball at, like, 98 years old.
Yeah, fantastic, right?
Incredible.
So I auditioned at this bar on the Lower East Side called Dan Lynch. It was on 2nd and 14th. And it was a cattle call. There was like 9 million guitar players there. Well, anyways, at the end of the night, the drummer says, so you going to move to New York then? And I'm like, well, sure. And he goes, okay, well, you got the gig. So I ended up playing with Mike for about two and a half years.
The drummer was the decider?
Yeah. He said, you go talk
to that
hick from Ohio.
I like that.
Another Charlie Watts move,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I like that. George Hurley.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So you go on tour with these cats.
Yeah, so we played, and this was, let me think. This was 1987 through just shy of 1990. And during that time, we played... We would go out for 6 weeks at a time, you know. It was kind of the blues version of your ethos of Econo. So we would go and play in Canada.
Colin, if you think about it, it all goes back to vaudeville.
It does, doesn't it?
It does, and it's nothing to be embarrassed or ashamed about. I think it's a proud tradition.
It's fantastic. I love it.
Yeah.
So, you know... There I am. My apartment was at 78th and 1st on the east side, but I was never there, and it suited me fine, because I was just renting basically a studio apartment that you could barely swing a cat in, let alone restring your guitar, you know? So I was gone all the time, but we would do like these 6-8 week tours where we would go from New York and shoot across the Midwest, up across the Great Plains, into Canada, over to Vancouver, down to Northern California, and zigzag again through the South and the Midwest, and then back up.
Yeah.
But it was great. But this was like backing Pinetop Perkins and Hubert Sumlin.
Oh,
and man,
beautiful.
I just learned
beautiful.
So much
from those guys.
We
call that route the Big Loop. In the springtime, I go clockwise. And in the fall, I go counterclockwise. Look, we're at the end of the... Yeah, I tell you, I learned a lot from the vaudeville cats, man. You did what John Coltrane did. You took on the mighty Sound of Music favorite things. Let's hear it.
Look on up at the bottom, y'all. We're called the Babes. We're happier here. We're Babes NYC. We have a very, very, very effing special effing guest tonight, Eliza Schiffer. Please give him a big hand on saxophone. He is effing incredible. I'm not cursing. I know there are some 12-year-olds out there. So anyway, the song's called Come On Baby. We want you to come along with us like those people are. 1, 2, 3. Come on, baby. Come on, baby. Come on, come on. Come on, baby. Come on, baby. Come on, come on. If you wanna, baby, wanna, baby. Wanna, wanna, wanna. You should come to me. Come to me. Come on, come on.
Yeah.
Watch for Pedro Show. Okay. That Chunk of Music. Calling John Electric Lotus with My Favorite Things. He's going to tell us a little bit and enlighten us here. The bloody freeway tires of amyloglycoside toxicity from James Twigg Harbor and Rubber O Cement. Every day is a Sunday from Kishibashi and L-1011. Come on, baby, from Babes, New York City. Plaster Men out of Ithaca, New York. Getaway Car. And finally, Runaway, calling John Electric Glows. Hip us to your take on My Favorite Things, Brother Carl.
Well, you know, it's a song I've always loved. I mean, I even like the Julie Andrews version, right? But the Coltrane one is really cool. But kind of the idea with the album was I want to take songs that people are familiar with. It could be, you know, an octogenarian or, you know, a young person. And, you know, one of the things, it's funny though, you know, everyone always pigeonholes you, and I'm primarily known as a blues guitarist, even though I play all other kinds of stuff. So, and it wasn't like, oh, I want to get away from that, but I like melodies. You know, melodies are cool things, and that song's got a wicked melody.
Can I ask you if you were hip to the Numbers Band in Akron?
Hell yes, I was, and am, and, you know, Chris played bass with them for a spell.
Absolutely. The Kidney
Brothers, Jack and Bob, are incredible. And actually, you know, Jack sits in every now and then with us on, he plays wicked blues harmonica, and he's a great sax player too. But yeah, the Numbers Band. Cool. Yeah. I love the way they deconstruct.
Yeah, there's buttloads of blues, great blues coming out of Ohio. But how long do you spend in New York City?
I was there for 2.5 years. Okay. And then what happened was Mike was moving down to Florida, and he wanted all of us to join him. And we were like, nah, I don't want to do that. So me and the rhythm section, Rob and Steve formed a band, and it was called Colin Jr. and the Root Doctors. And we kind of did that, the blues circuit for a while. We played a lot in, the East Coast and the Midwest mostly, with little forays down south. But then, the bass player decided he was going to go back to Rhode Island, and the drummer was going to move to Florida with Mike. So I went to Memphis after that. I had some friends there that I had met on the road. And I totally lucked into a gig there. I knew some guys from Arkansas who were the Saturday house band at B.B. King's, and they were called the Famous Unknowns. Well, they were going on the road. So they introduced me to the manager, and they said, hey, Colin would be a real great substitute. He'll be able to cover. So I put together a band. And so for just under 2 years was the house band on Saturday afternoon at B.B. King's on Beale. And that happened within days of arriving. So it was real lucky.
That's some good, you know, the bass man for Dead Kennedys, Klaus Flora, told me, you know, he moved from, I guess Felix Popolardi got his gig with Leslie West, you know, and was jammed with him. And he said, fuck it, and he had some bad things in Boston, so I'm going to move to San Francisco. And he said the day that he got in there, he answered an ad. It was Jella and East Bay Ray asking for a bass player for Dead Kennedys. He got the Dead Kennedys the second day he was in the city.
Fantastic.
Look, we're at the end of the second hour, September 11, 2021. Just Watt Peter, so special guest Colin John. Hold tight for hour three. September 11, 2021, it's the third hour of the Watt for Pedro Show.
the eternal love into the ear of death.
The promise of death is waiting for us, and it makes me wonder if that's where our home lies. Creeping in our creep because they leave us here by ourselves, but maybe not, for you know it must be good.
That must be our true love. It's just not me.
De mi banquero es muy hermosa la estación de mi banquero en la selva aquí no hay
en la selva amazónica no hay primavera en la selva amazónica no hay primavera
en la selva amazónica no hay primavera.
Amazónica no hay primavera. Amazónica no hay primavera.
rica no hay primavera.
Pedro show. Start off the third hour with John, Colin John, Electric Blue, Electric Lotus, sorry, Colin. Satisfaction. And then The Promise of Death from Crane's Susan Loa, Primavera, and El Selva, Chicha Libre, Ray Shin with Xenon, and I'm on Fire, Colin John, Electric Lotus. Colin, tell me how you met Brother Chris Butler.
I was playing a gig in Akron, and it was a house concert, and Chris turned up with a mutual friend, and my partner Deb, Long Tall Deb, and I were playing, and Chris really liked it because we're playing like original blues stuff, and Chris liked it, so we got to chatting, and you know, I was familiar with Chris's work with, obviously, The Waitresses, all the way back to The Numbers Band,
yeah.
Tin Huey, with, you know, Harvey Gold?
Sure.
You know,
he's
Harvey's
been on
a
the
great
show.
Character,
great,
too.
Great cat.
Yeah. So, we just decided, well, we should do something. So, about 6 months later, we were doing a tour down south and got in touch with Chris. I'm like, hey, would you like to play bass? He's like, sure.
Oh, so
you know,
he
a
joins
lot of people
the band.
Know Chris.
He actually joins the band. Okay.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, it's very loose. You know, it's okay. But, yeah, we did a bunch of gigs, and we had a great time. And, you know, Chris was using, like, a hollow body Guild bass through his Ampeg, the B-15. Like, real old school, and I love it. I'm like, that's the sound I like. I love that wood. It's like wood pushing air molecules through tubes, and it comes out all farty and beautiful and glorious.
Yeah.
So that's how we met Chris and stay
so
in touch.
He
and,
comes to the
you know,
gig.
I just can't.
What you're saying is he came to a gig, so it kind of a little mutual appreciation society because you knew him already, and then you got an opportunity, an opening, so you bring him into the band. Okay. That's what it's about. That
well, I
casual.
Said that,
okay.
Absolutely. And I told Deb, you know, Chris is professional. You know, he's going to do great. And he did because Chris isn't primarily a blues bassist. But we're not really a pure blues band anyway. So, you know, we've got a lot of influences.
You think there's pure
rock
of anything?
And roll. There's,
you think there's pure of anything?
No, I don't.
Oh, yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Everything's fouled. But
it's all fucked up and corrupted from one source to another. You know, it's like
that, it can lead to also interesting connections.
Well, it's really cool like that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've never like I respect the roots of any music, but I always what is the point of, you know, me trying to play like Hubert Sumlin and whomever's going to sing like Howlin' Wolf, you know? I mean, that's done. You know? So it can move, be part of move forward. Right?
Yeah. It's so funny when they asked Captain Beefheart about that. He said, no, no. You know. Whatever. The idea, but, though, is, I mean, like, you repurpose it, though, right? Even if there is influences. But, yeah, to put something in a glass box and just say that's the form and forever don't touch it. Yeah, it's kind of weird.
You know, sometimes that's why, you know, I just like to make music for music's sake, even though it's what I do. If somehow I managed to earn my living all these, you know, since basically professionally since 1987. I don't know how, but
working the room, so playing for people. It. That's how.
Yeah, kind of adapting to without having to kiss anyone's ass or do something you don't want to do, you know?
Right.
Like a lot of my solo gigs, I play restaurants and wineries. But then, you know, they would have no idea, you know, that I was into, you know, Henry Rollins and Greg Ginn and Gang of Four and stuff like that. You know?
You know
I
what?
Mean, I like my noise.
You gave me a bitchin' version of Jimmy, our experience. Let's listen.
Thank you.
Because it's like so all over the place, right? I mean, you've got Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy, then you've got Painted Black and Jockey Full of Bourbon. I had no idea, so I presented it to my partner Deb, who were listening, and she's like, I don't know, let me make up a story that goes along with the album. So she came up with this story that's actually a hidden track on the album itself, created the flow of the record, which intuited the order. And she thought it was a joke. And I'm like, no, 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 that's brilliant. And Chris said, that's perfect. We needed a theme song to kind of close the record. So that was the last song I did. And since it's the only original on the record, I'm like, right, well, let's call it like the Electric Lotus Lullaby. So, you know, it starts, you know, with the Are You Experienced, and then goes through this whole scenario of each song and finishes with that.
So we have a narrative to tie it all together that your partner came. Wow. Okay. Do you guys collaborate a lot like that?
We do. And there's a lot of times when I'll send Deb a riff over the phone, and she'll come up, oh, I've got lyrics that will fit with that. And that's how we've written quite a bit that way.
Usually you start off with a riff and then she replies with words?
Yes.
Okay. So does she keep a little notebook of words, or does she write on demand when she hears your music?
She keeps notebooks, and she has her little recording app where she'll, you know, speak phrases and then rearrange. And then when we get together to come up with something, it'll it comes together pretty quickly.
And you,
but,
and
you
too, do you record like your little melodies for your guitar stuff, like voice memo or some shit?
I do. Yeah exactly. I'm kind of a little slow at the tech thing, but I'm getting there.
That's
but
okay.
You know what? It works. So
I just imagine.
And,
Charlie,
but what I'll do,
I just imagine Charlie Christian. You know, he was a pioneer. What we take for granted now, right? And you know, only 25 years old. Tuberculosis,
I know, crazy.
Right? Yeah, like vaccines are bullshit, right? Okay.
Well, like when he walked in, they thought, "Who's this guy?" You know.
He's a pioneer.
But,
you know, Jim.
He was.
A friend of mine got turned on to him because Jimi Hendrix mentioned him. He said his man was Charlie Christian.
Yeah.
Wow. You know what? Music is like that. It's about people, even though it's about these bigger things in us, because they last longer than our short little lives. It's still about us, huh?
Absolutely. To me, it's, you know, it's about cultivating and maintaining relationships with good people, like-minded. That's what keeps us sane through all this, I think, Mike, you know?
Yeah.
So that's why it's such a pleasure to play with Chris and with Dab, because it's something, we're just on the same page, you know?
Yeah.
You just do it and boom, boom, boom.
And what's your next plan, Colin?
Deb and I are working on a new record. It's going to be an original sort of blues, rootsy album, and it's going to be stripped down. 2 years ago, we did a song, Deb, Chris, and myself, called Deflection Blues, talking about all the crazy shit, you know, leading up to the 2020 election.
Yeah.
And Chris was involved with that, and Deb, and we did it in Chris's studio, and it came out really powerful, and a lot of people liked it. When I say a lot, I'm not talking hundreds of thousands, you know, 15,000 people, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
These days. So we decided we're going to make another record, and we're like, let's do a stripped down acoustic record. But then because we like to fuck with everything sonically, like I like using distortions and reverbs and reverse things. It's like by the time I put all that shit on there, you know, it's going to sound electric. So let's make an electric album. So it'll be a stripped down electric. So me with guitar and lap steel, maybe the baby sitar, Deb's vocals and Chris's percussion, bass, drums. It should be pretty cool.
Well, can I ask you, Colin, when you get that record done, will you come back on the show? We can play all the songs and you can talk about how you made it.
Oh, I would love to.
Oh, man. It's been such an
absolutely
honor to have you
thank
on the show.
You.
It truly is. Your kind of spirit.
Watch for Pedro,
your kind of spirit really motivates me. I love it, man. This is why I'm in the music thing.
Oh, back at you. What for Pedro? Big love. Thank you so much.
Big love, absolutely. People, it's been September 11, 2021. This is why Pedro should keep your powder dry.